Welcome back to the Life on Target podcast. Nathan Spearing here, your host for today's episode. I haven't checked in on you in a little while. How are you doing? You living life on target? Have you identified the mark that you're trying to hit emotionally, spiritually, physically? And are you spending your time, your money, your attention towards hitting the mark? Hope so. And if not, hopefully today's episode will give you a couple ways to change your behaviors towards hopefully hitting the mark, or at least getting closer to hitting the mark. In the morning, my wife and I do coffee together most mornings. Not today. We were up a little bit later with the kids, and so I just came to the office after I hit snooze on the alarm a couple times, and I'm here recording this episode for you. But normal mornings, we get up, we brew some French press in the bus, we go out and sit on the chairs outside, we watch the sunrise over the treetops, and we just do a think about how we're going to spend the day. We'll read something, read the Bible, pray for the kids. It's not super structured, but it's just time to sit, be with my wife, and to make sure that we're ready for the day, be encouraging to each other, etc. And she, one morning a couple weeks ago, said, "We got to read this email I got from Hearth and Field." It was written by Matthew Gibroni, and it is entitled "Escaping Inflation." Obviously a hot topic, a word that's thrown around by pretty much everybody. And after listening to a couple of different podcasts and even going through some books on it, I think it's obviously a little bit more complex issue than a lot of the people are throwing out. But the bottom line is stuff costs more right now, and people are feeling it in different parts of their life, particularly gas and price of food, things like that, housing, everything. But not really going to talk about all the causes and effects of things there, but I just wanted to kind of go down the list and read some of the things that they recommended to fight inflation and then put my little spin on it. So the first way is, this is in the email, I'm quoting it, "There is no inflation of time. The government can play games with the numbers of dollars in the world and with the reports of their alleged value, but no one can alter the number of hours in the day. If we arrange our lives to be more dependent on time and less dependent on dollars, euros, pounds, etc., then the inflation has less effect on us." One of the ways that I have done this specifically in the trades and as an owner of a small business, and I heard this from a Andy Frisella podcast actually, about if you're in a service business or a business where you're essentially selling your time to perform these different tasks, the only real way, because you can't get more time, and you can, and I have at times, talk to my wife and be like, "Hey, I need to go into focus mode here, and I'm probably going to have to work some 10-hour, 12-hour days, a couple days a week. I'm going to have to go spend half a Saturday at the office getting caught up on different things." And the result of spending more time on work is more money when you own your own business. That being said, we've talked about how that's not the most important thing, and specifically about organizing time so that it's not all grind, get in there 77 hours a day. You got to do it. If you want to make it, if you want to be an entrepreneur, you can't sleep for 9 years straight. That's what I did. None of that stuff. It is working efficiently and working with skill. And Christians know that there's actually an additional step in the process of the grind, and that is the Sabbath, that God has said one day is set apart in the week. And that is specifically something that we should be all practicing, is a day of rest, a day of focusing on the Lord, and a day of giving a break from the toil. And that has been a huge practice for me to make sure that we stay grounded, to just not open the work email, not open, look at text messages that are work related, et cetera. I have most of my work texts come in through a different line, and I'm able to just unplug for Sunday. But that's not what we're talking about. It's not where I'm driving at. What I wanted to say is the way that you actually make more money when you're selling your time is you get better at what you do. You gain specialization. You get more skills. You look at not what is everybody else doing and how do I get the skills that everybody else has, but how do I get the skills that nobody else in my industry has, so that when somebody wants that particular thing, I'm the only one that can do it. Because I'm the only one that can do it, I can set my hours, I can set my schedule, I can set my prices. Ultimately, and that is particularly the case in an era when people don't want to work, when people want to sit at home, when people want to live off of mom and dad's money or the government's money that they're sending out to keep, spending all that time. They're doing the hustle and they're doing the grind to not hustle and grind. So figure out where you are right now. What are you doing? What is a certification, a skill, or something that you can gain that will make your time worth more money? Some friends of mine have gotten higher degrees. They've gone to Ivy League schools, and that's enabled them to get jobs that no one else can get. That may be the case as well, although that's not the route that I took. So think about that. Specifically, what I did in construction is I noticed that there's a difficulty of designers, architects, engineers, kind of all decorators that call themselves designers, let's not get into that, that are trying to tell clients how to do things. And oftentimes, even with this one big project that we're doing right now, the architect, licensed architect, just drew walls where they aren't walls and put closets where current roof framing is. So we can't even put the closet there without massive structural changes. And so I've just kind of seen the gaps that the things that each one of these different trades, the engineer, the architect, the designers, kind of all have blind spots. And I have started drawing the projects that we do so that I can essentially be the designer, architect, engineer. I can't stamp plans. I can't certify them. But what I do is I come up with the plan. I look at things and then I hire the engineer to look at it and specify. And I have a good understanding of that now after doing tons of structural work. I can look at a house. I can think, okay, I'm pretty sure that it's going to be about this. And a lot of times, it's a bigger beam than I expected because a way different, forces are at play. But the fact that I can go in and I can come up with the plan and I can draw it and I can then go specifically to these trades and get feedback on specific aspects of it, I actually get to charge a lot more because I am providing a complete service. And that's essentially even what a contractor does. He assembles 50 different people to bring about a result for a client. And I'm trying to get better at that. I am trying to streamline things. I'm bringing in software that enables our clients to see the calendar, et cetera. All these ways that I'm able to make myself different and provide services to clients that other contractors just don't do. Most contractors, a lot of contractors can't even turn on a computer still. Well, maybe not all of them at this point, but anyway, the next thing in the email that they talk about fighting inflation is to buy goods that hold value and don't shrink. Now, obviously, this is not to be a hoarder or a jerk, as he says in the email. Recognize that you can store wealth in things you will actually need. A gallon of olive oil will always be worth a gallon of olive oil. A treasury inflation protection security might go up, it might go down, but will not taste as good as focaccia. So this isn't, buying 10,000 rolls of toilet paper, et cetera, but there's dry goods, there's things that will stay, have shelf life that you can buy. And if you buy it with the purchasing power of the dollar right now, then you've essentially saved money over time. Now, it does require you to be out that money up front. So there's a tension here to this. My own twist on it is, you know, I own tractors and trailers and trucks and tools and things like that for my construction business, for my farm, and pretty much everything I own cash. I don't have to make a payment on my trailer. I don't have to make a payment on my truck. I don't have to make a payment on my John Deere tractor. I don't have to make a payment on my barn. All these things that I have that all can be used to make money. It ties into that time thing. I've bought goods. I've bought things that hold their value. I mean, obviously, you're not going to be able to resell a DeWalt tool set after you've used it a couple weeks for the same price. So in a sense, that it doesn't hold its retail value, but the value of the money, of money that you can use, combining that with time that isn't costing you to keep it. It isn't costing you to have it on the shelf. That is a way that you can fight inflation. So instead of buying toys, buy tools. All right, getting to the third item, buying quality. So they say quality is worth much more than we realize. And he uses the example in the email where he talked about how he bought a front door knob that just, or front door hardware that just breaks all the time, and how his grandmother's never breaks. And now if you keep having to buy a $50 front door knob or whatever, and you could just buy a $400 front door knob or something that's going to last you forever, that the fact that you just have to keep repeatedly buying a crappy thing, that over time you're spending a lot more money because you're having to replace it. And I've talked about this on a previous podcast. I can't even remember what episode this was. I think it was maybe stealing from your kids and talking about charging the right price and giving a quality product and then not giving discounts. We like to try to get a deal. I literally got an email from a client this morning that I read when I woke up and I had to put on the shelf for a little bit. I'm offering to do a massive remodel on the first thing that we sent them numbers on. They said, oh, well, we're going to try to buy this material ourselves, but we still want quality and we want you to do this. And let's get some more subs out here and let's compare this price and jumping in and trying to pull all the levers themselves to try to squeeze out a little bit of savings, a little bit of there, but we want it to be just the same quality as the number one guy in town that you use, that you've used repeatedly on other projects, that offers warranty on their work, that has been voted the best by the town in competitions. We don't want to take his numbers. We want to pinch him. We want him to go over the quote. We want him to take away, we want discounts. We want him to do whatever, but at the very end of her email, but we want to still have the same quality. They may not be a client of mine once I get done with this podcast. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. I'm going to have to talk with them about it. But back to how you can buy quality. Two examples that I have of this in my life. I bought a Fry messenger bag 8 years ago, and it was $500 to buy that thing. It's actually a little bit cheaper nowadays, which is crazy to me. But it's easy to look as a $500 for a bag. I put my laptop in it, my iPad, my tape measure. I go to job sites and measure and draw things. I got the mouse in there. It's, you know, I know where the power cords go. It is perfect for what I need to carry what I need to the job site, to take my laptop back to the farm, to come back to the office. And it looks better than it looked when I bought it 8 years ago, because you know how leather just ages and it has these marks, and there's, you know, times that I maybe it hit, bumped into something, scuff mark. And I was at a workshop with a bunch of business owners last week, and I think I probably got eight people that were like, man, nice bag. What bag is that? People, you can identify quality. You know, obviously I'm not buying this stuff because I want to go to a workshop and have people like my bag. I want something that's going to function for me, that's going to be efficient, because I take my laptop out of my bag and put it back in my bag multiple times a day. I move from job to job. I need something that's going to be durable. and people will buy $100 faux leather bags that fall apart every year or every other year. So they'll buy 4, 5, 6, 8 bags. They'll end up costing you $800 over the same period of time when my bag is just continuing to be nicer. So in recap, learn some skills to make your time worth more so that you can make more money when you exchange it for the dollar. Buy things that hold their value. And then the twist on it that I have is that then you can use with time to make money and buy quality so you don't have to buy it a bunch of times. What other ways do you guys fight inflation? Shoot me a message on the IG. Fire me an email. I'll be posting a quick audiogram of this episode, and you'll have an opportunity to maybe join the conversation. Other ways that you and your family have found to fight the rising costs of goods. I think one of the things, I want to go ahead and just throw this in at the end. I've said this, is there's a phrase in the Lord of the Rings where Frodo talks about feeling like butter scraped over, actually maybe the Bilbo that says it, feeling like butter scraped over too much bread. And I think that's just a great picture sometimes about how money is. You're trying to take this money, this cube of butter that you got, and you're trying to scrape it out over to all the edges, and you're just running. Everybody knows when you cut into a thing of butter, you don't have enough. When you drag it across the bread, and it doesn't make it. You can't get all the edges. You can't get it right. And I feel like the majority of people focus on how can I scrape this butter over my bread more efficiently. That's what the budgeters are. That's okay, budget. You got to do this, whatever. But I got it. You do have to spend the money you have the right spots. But very few people talk about how to get more butter. And that's essentially what this email is, or this email that I read to you, and then what we're talking about. How do you get more butter? How do you make more money? How do you put that money into things that hold its value? How do you not spend money on stuff that doesn't work or doesn't function properly after just a few weeks of using it because you're trying to get a good deal? As always, I hope this was practical, helpful, put you on target. If it did, if you know somebody who is sitting there in the rat race, who isn't spending their free time trying to get more skills, just going to the Netflix. Watching Netflix very rarely equals your time being worth more. People, watch things, videos, YouTube, you can learn amazing skills. Getting a tool out, putting YouTube up on the workbench and trying a skill. Get after it. Learn some skills. Get some more butter for your bread. Have a good one.